Welcome back to Heritage Radio Network On Tour. We are broadcasting from the Good Food Mercantile in San Francisco. I'm here with two very, very special guests today. The first is Beatrice Ughi from Gustiamo. Welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Good, very well. And our second guest is Rolando Beramendi from Manicaretti in Oakland. Welcome.
Thank you very much for having us.
So thank you so much for sitting down today. It's a really beautiful day and we have an incredible view over the city in downtown San Francisco, and we are in the midst of a pretty giant trade show. So what are your impressions of this San Francisco Mercantile show so far?
So I think that this is a fantastic initiative that's going on, I know, 10 years. Or next year they will celebrate 10 years, which is a great accomplishment. And it's wonderful to celebrate the good hard work of American producers, and we love to meet them and to hear their stories and to support them. This is why Manicaretti and Gustiamo are here, to support the American producers and to talk about the Italian producers and farmers as well, that live with by the same standards of passion and quality.
I agree with Beatrice. I'm just thrilled to be here because I've been doing this for 30 years, and we're at the epicenter where it all began, because the food revolution happened here in San Francisco. But what I'm most excited about is the fact that we, as the first Italians, right off in this, among these incredible American producers, is we wouldn't be eating this incredible good food that we eat nowadays in California and throughout the United States had it not been for all these people also coming to our country and for our products from Italy coming over here so that we all eat much better food. So I think it's a great opportunity to enjoy what I always say is we live in a global community now. We're globally local. We are enjoying the great food of people who work hard to make this great food happen.
Yeah. So you are both operating importing businesses from Italy, but you're located on opposite coasts. So Gustiamo, of course, is in the Bronx, and Manicaretti is here in Oakland. So what do you think are some of the differences maybe in the market between the East and West Coast for your businesses?
I believe that we talk to the same market. We talk to the same chefs. We talk to the same, meaning same in terms of the same vision, the same philosophy, and we talk to people that love our products, and they want to learn. They want to understand where the products come from, what is its story, and we talk in general to, I believe, it's the same.
It's a very small community of
very
people
small community,
that are interested
certainly.
In high-quality products.
Yeah. So, and in terms of similarities between the West Coast and the East Coast, I think it's in both cases it is very difficult. It takes much effort for us, for me, Gustiamo, or Manicaretti with Roland, to talk to this to our chefs and customers and make them realize what is the difference between a real Italian product and a fake Italian product, because the price we suffer from the competition from the fake Italian. Everything is Italian sounding, a fake. So this is what we do. We spend a lot of time and effort trying to teach.
I think that Beatrice and I share the common passion of trying to defend what is truly authentic. I think that the word that is really important in what we do is basically trying to protect the people, like the producers that we represent, which are the same as the people that are out here showing their food. But we're sort of like Don Quixote and Sancho Panza fighting the windmills, trying to show to the American chefs and retailers what is truly Italian and what is authentic.
The issue of authenticity is very, very important. So important that Rolando dedicated his last 3 or 4 years to write a book called Authentico.
I think it's very important that we understand what is authentic. And there's so many fake products out there. There's so many things that are not even made in Italy that they carry Italian names and brands. And it's just, you know, there's nothing easier than seeking what is truly authentic. And, you know, what I'm hoping as well is that people will come more often to Italy, because we're also part of this global community, and it's also very important that we all come and sell our products here. But we would really love that someday America will sell their products also in Europe as well.
That was my next question, is do you see ever with your businesses or with a similar business kind of turning it around also and selling artisanal American food products in Italy, say?
I think it would be a wonderful thing, and it would certainly be my attitude in trying to create some reciprocity rather than building walls or enacting more controls and FDA. And it's so difficult, a bureaucracy that we deal with, and I don't think anybody understands the amount of work and effort that goes into bringing products through the ports and into the American consumers. It's very difficult now.
Yeah. What are the products on your tables that you are most excited about today?
Well, today in particular, the products on our table, the very exciting are the flours from ancient Sicilian wheats, stone milled in Castelvetrano. And why I'm very excited, not only because it's a fantastic product, it goes back to the origins, to the Greeks in Sicily who planted this, started to work with these ancient seeds. But also because the producer is here, the miller, called Filippo Drago from Castelvetrano, from a family of millers. He's here, first time in San Francisco, very excited. He's here at our table. And with his best friend, a professional baker who bakes with these wheats, with the owner of the land where these wheats, in Sicily,
oh
where
God.
These wheats, wow. Beautiful.
How much
extension.
0 kilometer can you get?
It's exactly. It is beautiful. So, and the collaboration between the three and their farmers is really very interesting and inspiring.
Wow.
Because they really are reintroducing in the world a product that was never, that had been completely forgotten taken over by industrial wheat that is now flour, that is just now sugar.
Fantastic.
Fantastic.
She's the best. I wish Beatrice would be the president of the Republic of Italy. She would be for you.
You have my president vote. Or the president of the agricultural department.
Yes.
This is what
go.
I want
Bravo,
to do.
Beatrice.
And promotion of Italian exports.
Exactly, yes. Beatrice for
Unfortunate
president.
Unfortunately, it's not.
I'm also excited about, you know, flour and water. I think that we don't understand how important wheat is. And I also have a wonderful person at my table. His name is Gianluigi Peduzzi, and he comes from Rusticella d'Abruzzo, the pasta that sort of 30 years ago was the first one to come through with artisan method. We have at our table the pasta that he produces with wheat that is 100% produced in the hills around the factory, and he's given work to 60 farmers who basically had derelict fields and rediscover 4 varieties of ancient loom grain as well to make his delicious pasta. It's very different Italian wheat than American wheat. Italian wheat is more perfumey. It has almost like a nutty flavor. It has more of a, like when you're toasting bread, you know, that kind of flavor. And it's really amazing. I hope you can come by and try it.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to. I did also just have a very delicious anchovy on a buttered toast, and that was wonderful. Can you tell us about that?
Well, those anchovies are harvested right outside of Cetara, and right off the Amalfi coast. And they're actually It's really funny. The fishing boats are all, you know, fishermen. They're men on the boats. But once the anchovies gone on the ground, they are handled only by women. And they're these most meticulous women who got them and put them under salt in these big barrels, where then they're pressed and put in the cellar for 12 months.
And I actually then after visited Chitara and I saw the patterning of laying down the anchovies and heard that every maker has their own pattern. Is that true?
Exactly.
Is that what they tell the tourists?
Make the colatura.
And then you actually, the byproduct, it will be the colatura. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the anchovy essence, as we call it. I think it's really delicious that then they're, you know, those after 12 months under salt, they're very fragile. So they have to be treated with such kindness. And you have to see the work of these ladies, how gentle they do it. And then I don't think there's anything better than a piece of bread with a big slab of sweet butter and a great big anchovy on it.
Yum.
That's my favorite.
This is what, when we were kids, this is what we had for what we would have for merenda.
Yeah, burro acciughe.
Burro acciughe, and on a piece of bread.
Oh, it's wonderful.
And this thing, oh, I should have learned, I should have known from Rolando, this thing that the crews on the boats, on the fishing boats, are only men. Because I went to go on a professional fishing.
They let you
in
on?
In Chetara. In Chetara. And so we got on this boat at seven in the evening. And we get on the boat. It was a fishing trip, a real fishing trip. So the 12 men of the cruise came on the boat. We take off. And after 5 minutes, I said, well, what time do we come back? Approximately. Like 5 in the morning, 6 in the morning. Oh, that's great. I mean, it's a great day, great night. But then I said, okay. And I then realized that I was told there was no bathroom on the fishing boat. And that was it.
They say in Chetara and all around, the fishermen, you go, they don't bring women, but they say that otherwise they might not catch any fish, you know, so that's, but
well,
I think
I'm
it's
sure
really
Beatrice
funny.
Beatrice proved them wrong.
Beatrice proved them wrong.
But the diversification should extend there too.
Yeah.
There should be more mixing of
I agree.
Of sexes
I couldn't believe.
And,
I agree.
And ages. And although it was beautiful to see them on the fishing
it's
boat, it was beautiful. It was like in harmony. Everybody knew what to do exactly at what point. It was really like a concert.
But
it was beautiful.
If you think about it, Beatrice, then I go and I see these wonderful women all in perfect quiet and silence, working with such beauty and such patience. I would peel 3 anchovies and I would pull my hair out. I mean, I don't have any left anyway, but it's like the patience and the gentleness and the touch and everything is so seductive, I think. I think that's why also the fishermen, you know, the women make the best anchovies in the world.
Yeah.
So are there any products here at Good Food Mercantile that you're very, very excited to have tasted today, or anything new you discovered this morning?
No, I'm looking forward to taste them. But I saw wonderful, wonderful people and lots of salumi, I must say.
Yeah.
I mean, I did a quick tour because we just started now. Lots of salumi and they look fantastic. And cheeses, of course.
I'm very excited with a person who is right next to us that he's growing wheat in Arizona. And I've tasted some of his crackers. They're just unbelievable. I mean, you can really taste the wheat. You can... It's not flour and water.
Is that Hayden flour mills?
Yeah, Hayden, yeah. Unbelievable. I've never tasted crackers that good. That's as far as I got.
Cool. Okay.
So we think that this event is really spectacular. And I know that in addition to Brooklyn and San Francisco, goes into another city.
Mm-hmm. I think next is L.A. in March.
Right. And you see how these producers are proud and how they're happy. We went to the event last night, everybody wearing their medals, I mean, with much pride, and they really appreciate, I'm sure. I mean, it's a tough job.
Yeah.
For us who import this, in our case, Italian product, good products, and for them also it's a tough job to keep their integrity is difficult.
I think the most wonderful thing is to feel yet again the wonderful explosion of creativity, because there's so much creativity around here. The creative products, the creative names, the creative packaging. I mean, it's just, and it's so nice to see so many young people, right, in here. You see the future of good food in the United States right here.
Amazing. Well, Beatrice and Ronaldo, thank you so much.
Grazie
mille.
Thank you to Heritage Radio for having us.
I am so glad. Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. We'll see you soon. Stay tuned for more from Good Food Mercantile in San Francisco. This is Heritage Radio Network On Tour.
Welcome to this episode of Heritage Radio On Tour, broadcasting from the Good Food Mercantile in San Francisco. This is Luke Schmucker from Shaxbury Cider, and I'm here talking to David Yord from Regalis Food.
How you doing, Luke?
How's it going, buddy?
Good.
Good to see you. Just for people who don't know, hopefully they should know what Regalis Food is, but for people that don't know what Regalis Food is, can you give them a brief explanation of what you guys do?
Sure. I'm half owner along with my wife and Ian Perkaista. Ian founded the company about, I think it's 6 years ago, and Carrie and I joined 4 years ago when it was much smaller than it is now. And in short, we are a luxury food purveyor. We import truffles, wild mushrooms, caviar. We do distribution in New York City. In Dallas, Texas, we have a warehouse, and we just opened one in Chicago in May. But we also have some products that we sell nationally under our own label, which is why we're here now, promoting to retail shops and distributors throughout the country.
And what foods do you guys have here at Good Food?
So at Good Food, it's more of our domestic focus. So we brought our domestic white sturgeon caviar and our Columbia River smoked trout roe. We have our organic white and black truffle oils from California. We do a truffle honey that we have made for us in Georgia using Tennessee truffles. And we just introduced some wild forage berry jams from Saskatchewan, which is, there's so many cheese people here, it fits a little bit better than some of our other products.
There's definitely a lot of cheese here. When I think about Regalis, I always think of you guys as being one of the first people to find foods that I can't find anywhere, and I don't know where to get, and it's like, you know, if you're looking a guy to get kumquats, or like, I think I saw a photo of some white strawberries or something like that at one point. What are the foods that you're currently excited about?
Well, I mean, we have a weird philosophy of anything that's difficult to sell, we tend to jump right on top of it. So we just installed a live seafood tank in our New York warehouse, which we're bringing in Norwegian king crabs and Karuma Ebi from Japan, live langoustines from Norway as well. This was brand new, much as anticipated, not easy to maintain, so we're still getting our feet underneath it with us. But that's like taking over our state of being for the last month or so.
When you guys are trying to figure out what foods you're going to bring in, is it more chef-driven, or chef restaurant tour, whatever it is, driven, or are you the ones that are finding these foods and then telling them how to work with them?
It's a mix. Like, so for us and my partner Ian, especially being in the industry, we kind of have developed a good feeling of what chefs will get excited about. We only work with what's best in class or best in category. We'd never compromise in any commodity products, and even the specialty products or branded products we have, we feel are elevated. So, you know, to answer the question, we see stuff that's out there that's cool that we think chefs will get excited about. Doesn't mean that they're going to buy 1,000 pounds of anything. But that's kind of the niche in which we're living and having success with it.
Yeah. What's the, I don't know, I guess what's the craziest thing that you've brought in where you're just like, I don't even know what the application would be for this or what people would use it for? Like, is there anything like that?
Let's see. There's plenty of that. I'm trying to think of something that comes to mind. Just because we're at the show, we brought in these from a forager in Saskatchewan, these IQF berries and from northern Canada. And honestly, we almost just picked a lot on the name. So they all turned out. And one was Cloudberry, which sounds really interesting, really cool, right? Everything else came in like perfect IQF berries, but this one came in a bucket. And like, we didn't really do the research on it till it came in, and they grow in Arctic swamps. And you open up the bucket and it like, it doesn't look pretty or smell pretty. And we're like, how is anybody going to buy this? I don't even want to say what it smelled or looked like, but turns out like, we made some jams out of them, and we're selling some to like Smith and Loyalist in Chicago, which is Michelin starred, and they're doing some just like a reduction on the plate, and it turns out to be really delicious once you work with it. But the raw product itself was like not appetizing to look at.
Yeah, and so walking around here today, what's been the standout for you?
I haven't walked down around at all. We're like in the sun there, and we're just dying against the window. So
who are you hanging out with over there?
With Lady Edison.
Yeah.
So that's actually another product we work with that I think is one of the most has the most potential and regional distinctive products almost in the country right now. It's a country ham from North Carolina, animal welfare approved, and cured for 18 months, and just the funkiness of this ham like sits right alongside a Berico with a significant difference, but it's just one of those products that like makes you step back once you taste it, which is kind of rare to find nowadays. We're just exposed to so much that finding something that really sets you back is exciting.
I agree. It's absolutely delicious. What do you think it is about the way that it's produced? Or like, I mean, obviously, on the high level, you know, there's a lot of love and care that goes into it. But what is it that makes that so special? Like, because I agree, it's really special. But like, how does that happen?
So, basically, it's done in a traditional country ham style, which there are a lot of variances depending on the region in the South, right? The first difference is it's done with heritage hogs, so large Berkshire, Duroc, and Chester White crosses. Right now, the guy curing its name is Rufus Brown, which should tell you a lot right there. But it's a traditional ham that goes, they basically mimic the seasons as if you're curing it in a barn in North Carolina 100 years ago. So it goes into salt for, I think, 8 weeks or 10 weeks. It goes off into the spring room, which is like a 55-degree room for a couple months. Then it goes into the summer room, which that's where the curing is actually done. And that's done at like 85 degrees. What happens at that temperature, I think there's a lot of water activity that goes on, which kind of brings out the funk of the ham. And then it goes back into the fall room or the spring room and is allowed to cure for long months. So it's just something done in the traditional way, but using heritage pork, heritage breeds, with a lot of love and care. And obviously 18 months versus 6 or 8 months, it makes a difference as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming by and hanging out, Dave.
Thank you. I appreciate the invite.
I appreciate it. And thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network on Tour. Listen to more interviews from the Good Food Mercantile at heritageradio.org.
Hi, and welcome to this special episode of Heritage Radio Network on Tour. We're broadcasting today from the Good Food Mercantile in San Francisco. I'm Ethan Frisch, co-host of the Why Food podcast on Heritage Radio Network. And I'm here with Suresh Pillai, who is the co-founder of Atina Foods. Suresh, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Gohan.
Suresh, what is Atina Foods? What do you make?
Atina is a name of the corn mother goddess of the Mohicans, of the land that we live in upstate New York. So upstate New York, we carry in, I mean, we married, I came from India in 2014. So Carrie was living in Brooklyn. We decided to move because I was tired of living in the city, so was she. So we moved to upstate New York. We bought this house, a little property. So the first name came to us, this Athena, Corn Mother Goddess. We didn't know that.
Were you making food at that point?
Yeah, well, we decided, like, she's coming from media background, cultural practitioner, so am I. So we didn't want to get back to the media, cultural, and I'm a new migrant in US. Finding a job, it's difficult, and, you know, the whole of the rest of the story. So we decided to get into something which we can use our hand. And I have been a farmer and a food maker ever since I remember. So we started working, growing mustard, you know, the mustard seed, and started cooking food for our friends in Catskill, so which the people encouraged, they liked it. So we started one after another. And now 3 years, wherever we are going, people like our food. So Athena Food basically manufactures, we make food, traditional Indian, which is Ayurvedic food, which Ayurveda looks at the food as the medicine as the food, so are the Mohican Native Americans. So the name Athena and the food which we are making is almost the same.
What are your best-selling foods? What are the things that you're most proud of?
Yeah, the best-selling products are three products. I mean, I would say the first one is ginger tamarind. Ginger tamarind is ginger. The word name of the product is Inji Puli. The word ginger comes from the word Inji, and that's where the ginger was born in western cuts of India. That's where I was also born. So the turmeric and ginger was born in these western cuts. Fortunately, so the recipes come from the same landscape. The recipe of the food that we make comes from the same landscape that where ginger and turmeric was born. Fortunately, I was also born there. So it is a long tradition of landscape or habitat, the food culture, and that we are.
And Carrie, who's the other half, the other co-founder of Athena Foods, just joined us. Carrie, thanks for,
Hi.
For stopping by. So what are your favorite Athena products?
It's funny because they seem to change depending on the weather. Right now, I think the sweet turmeric herbal jam, I just can't help to love it. And it is so good mixed in yogurt. It's so good on avocados. It's just like, it's kind of heavenly. But what else right now do I... Okay, but also the garlic scape pickle. The garlic scape pickle is just like... awesome.
How did you decide to start this as a company, to take it, you know, from a hobby, from something you were doing for yourselves, to something now that you're selling to other businesses and people?
Yeah. Well, Suresh and I moved upstate about 4 years ago, and we really wanted to see what we could do with the land that we lived on. So taking what knowledge we had, adapting that and seeing what we could grow. We don't grow all the food that we use, but we're able to experiment with the food that we grow and learn about what is growing around us. So it helps us, besides that we want to introduce it to other people, it helps us become more more involved with where we live, which we think is really important for all of us.
And you describe your food as Ayurvedic. Could you explain a little more about what that is and why that's important to you, and maybe something that you wish people understood better about Ayurveda that they don't understand?
One thing, Suresh is going to talk more about this, but one thing I want to say is that Ayurveda is also, it's about finding the benefits, the health benefits where you live rather than just importing them. So that's part of in the understanding where we live, that's part about understanding where we live and what the health benefits where we live are. And Suresh?
Yeah. As Carrie said, some of the fundamental principles of Ayurveda is to locate the food. The food is the medicine. Medicine is the food. There's no separation. What you eat is what you are. And we need to locate. We have human beings are natural beings. They are not manufactured beings. They're natural beings. So human beings have a natural responsibility to look at, to treat the nature as extension of yours, or we live in the nature. The nature doesn't live, like, as the Native American says, we are part of the nature. So you cannot buy a land. You live in a land. The same philosophy applies in Ayurveda. Ayurveda is a system of medicine. It's an ancient system of medicine, which consider the body has a natural system of balance. And food is the medicine, and the food has a purpose. Food has a purpose of regaining or facilitating or helping the body to regain its natural balance. So all of our food reflects the same philosophy. For instance, Katie's favorite product, garlic scape. Garlic scape is a product which we developed consciously because we saw farmers are either throwing away the garlic or they're making the pesto. People can't eat cheese, you know. So we just developed it from our own experiments. So it is a, and then green tomato. It's grown there. It's green tomatoes. We grew the green tomato. We grew the garlic. So this is the kind of philosophy that we are trying to develop in the food.
We started the green tomato. Yep. We started the green tomato because there was a big storm, and a friend of ours lost all their tomatoes, and they gave us bags and bags of green tomatoes, and then they're like, "What can you do with them?" And there came our green tomato, which was a finalist in the Good Food Award.
Similar thing with the garlic scape. We don't know what, you know, like, I mean, the farmers, you know, like, we go to the farmer's market. Farmers are the, I mean, they're in farmers in, I mean, I'm coming from India. But every day, hundreds of farmers are committing suicide just because of the crime of growing food. So are in America. So it's there's no difference. So what our endeavor in our food business is, how do we integrate the habitat, the, you know, the farming, the food producer, and the food making, the process of food.
Where can our listeners find out more information about your products and buy some for themselves?
Well, you can find out about us at our website, which is www.atinafoods.com. In New York, you can get our products at Calustians and SOS Chef and Orchard Grocer, and you can find out the rest of the places you can get our food at our website.
That's great. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network on Tour, and listen to more interviews from the Good Food Mercantile at heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks.